I'm just a cheeky chappy.
Oh, hello. I'm just a little cheeky chappy. I like to say hello to the dolly birds. I give them a smile and a wink.
Oh, hello, dolly birds.
Hello. I'm all right. You all right?
I'm all right. How are you? Are you all
right? Oh, I've just got a twinkle in my eye. And I don't take sugar in my tea because I'm sweet enough already. And I love everyone and I'm a nice guy.
Wait. Who am I? Hold on. Hello, I'm Alfie. Oh, but I'm also Alfie. Who am I? Eh? Which one?
Oh, I don't know, mate. Oh, hang on a sec. No. Hello, I'm Alfie. Hang on a sec. I'm also Alfie.
I'm also...
Oh, crap. Hello.
Hello there.
Hello, mate. How's it going?
Good, thank you. Can I speak to Alfie?
Yes, hello. It's Alfie here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that a different person?
No, same person. That's all, mate. It's me. It's me, it's Alfie.
Oh, wow. You've got a really unusual voice. Has something happened to you?
No. It's just, this is how I speak, mate. This is how I speak. I speak like this. Yeah.
Oh, you sound a lot like Tom Hardy's mum.
How's it going, Joe? It's been a while.
Oh, yeah. Pretty good, man. It has been a while. How was your holiday?
Yeah, people have asked me that.
Yeah?
No, it was good.
Why is it weird that people have asked you that? Because, you know, when you go on holiday, people generally ask you, how was your holiday?
Yeah, but I always feel like people want to know, but they also don't want to know. They don't want to hear about it. They don't want to hear, really. No one wants to hear about it. And if you say you had a great time and what you did, they're also like, why are you telling me?
Yeah.
And you're like, you just asked me. And then, so what I do is I go, yeah, it was fine. And then they look like I haven't given them, I haven't played the game.
Yeah. They go, oh, just fine. Was it just fine?
Oh, you're too shy and miserable to talk about your holiday. Oh, self-deprecating.
Oh, I didn't even enjoy himself.
I was punctured in a haze of a drunken hour, and heaven knows I'm miserable now.
I was swimming in a pool in southern Greece, and heaven knows I don't want to talk about it at the office.
I was splashing in a pool in a lovely sun. But, yeah, you know, I do like that. The Morrissey notion of, it's the weir, the lyric. You go home and you cry and you want to die.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great lyric in that where, what's he say? It's something about, it's about like when you're self-involved. If you think shyness can be, that's a different song. Shyness can be something, and shyness, do do do. That's a different, there's like three different Morrissey lyrics.
I'm the sun and the air.
There you go.
Of a shyness that is criminally vulgar.
You knew the bit, that's exactly, that is the one.
No, I mean, I'm reading the lyrics.
I mix all the Morrissey song, the Smith song, that's a Smith song, together. But that is the one, that kind of the self-importance of being shy. I'm shy. You want everyone to look at you and you want to suck attention, and it's actually a form of aggression. And so I feel that in those conversations. How was your holiday?
You should say, you shut your mouth. How can you say I go about things the wrong way? You know, I'm human and I need to be loved just like everybody else does. Denise, or whoever it is that you're talking to at the office. Yes,
Denise. Anyway, how are you?
I'm absolutely fine, man. I haven't been on holiday, but if I had been on one, I wouldn't tell you about it.
Yeah, good. But it was good. Only maybe one very serious argument with my wife. Otherwise, it's pretty good.
Where's your wife now?
She's actually here. She hasn't left me.
Oh, she's here.
That's her thudding about upstairs. I was recording the first of five Joe Made Me Watch episodes. They're specials. Look forward to those in the coming weeks.
I just listened to one and I can hear your wife thudding around. Clanking.
I had to shout up. I said, I'm recording. I cut that out. But for kind of part of me wishes I'd left it. Should have left it in.
Me too. Me too.
I'm trying to record my solo film podcast episode about Lion.
You would have been like, oh, darling, oh, keep pipe it down up there, darling, love, hey.
But, and also, I did a double bill. I did a double bill at the cinema. I haven't been to the cinema in ages.
Oh, shit. What did you bill?
Well, I billed the two hot YouTuber-turned-movie makers.
Oh, there's two?
There's two, mate.
I've heard all about one of them, Back Doors or something. Mm, or
Back Doors.
In the back door, getting back in rooms. The back door. Back Rooms. Back rooms, yeah. I heard about that one, but there's a second YouTuber film, is there?
Yeah, they've got silly names. One of them's called Curry Barker. He directed Obsession.
Right.
He's similar to... He's got a similarly kind of like comedic lineage as Zach Cregger, who has come out in the horror scene, mate, you know, big on the YouTubes. And then there's right. Kane Parsons.
Kane, but that sounds like a cross between a biblical character and a sort of area of London. You know, I've straight about that, haven't I? I've straight about that. There is a biblical character called Kane, and I was thinking of Parsons Green, but
that's fine. Yeah, I didn't mind it. I was going to do a train announcement, and I thought, well, do you know what? It doesn't warrant.
No, do it. I would love to hear that. Hold on, let me make the noise for you. Boo, boo,
boo. You've alighted at Kane Parsons. All right, darling, do you want to go down Kane Parsons, up the whole high street of Kane Parsons? I'll take you up the Curry Barker. Oh, I'll take you up the Curry Barker, my love. And I don't mean like that. I mean for a nice ruby. We'll have a ruby, you get a pilau, I'll get the mango chutney, and then we'll have a lovely little tinkle over the toilets. anyway, so the two, they're like, Kane Parsons is 20 years old. He's been making this Backrooms series, like internet thing. They're all Backrooms, basically. You move your hand through a wall and then you're in the Backrooms. He's right. made a movie, A24, and then Curry Barker has made Obsession, which is more of a, it's a kind of a, you wish, a kind of cuck character. It's a slight cuck satire. A cuck wishes this girl that he's adored in secret for a while. He wishes she loved him more than anything else in the world. Oh, boy, does that backfire.
Right. Got it.
Quite like, there's some good, fun little moments in Obsession.
Oh, yeah?
About 20 minutes too long. Should be 90 mins.
Sure.
A little bit of gore. I think you wouldn't enjoy it because it's a little bit scary.
No.
But Backrooms is what it's a generational, they're calling it well, they're not. I think I've decided to call it a generational horror. A lot of kids, they love the series, they love the YouTube thing, and a lot of young kids will watch that and it'll be their Blair Witch or whatever.
Right. Someone in the Discord, although I will have to admit I can't remember if it was the Movies You Forgot Discord or the TIFO Discord, it's one or the other. But someone in the Discord asked me if I was going to see it. And I said, oh, I won't go because I don't like horror. And they said, oh, it's not really horror. It's, you know, something, something, something. And my response was, yeah. People are always trying to tell me that horror films aren't horror films. That's all. Horror fans spend their lives trying to convince people that the films that they really like aren't horror films, even though they're self-styled fans of horror. Do you know? It's funny that, isn't it? You meet people who love horror films, but none of the films they ever recommend to you are horror films. But only when you say you don't want to watch them.
Yeah. I mean, I would say it's more of a psychodrama.
Sure. But you've already described it twice as horror. And now, you see the irony. You're now, as soon as I've pushed a little bit on it, now you're starting to describe it as something else to me.
It obviously sits in the horror genre because it's about jump scares and people.
You go
in these back rooms and like in the round a corner, you know, you see someone poking out and then disappearing and people running away. But the problem of it was it wasn't scary. And what it is at heart, it should be the horror, but what it really is, Kane has made a psychodrama where people work through their fucking trauma in the back rooms. And I've got no interest in that.
Kane Parsons.
Tame Parsons.
Yeah, Tame Parsons Green. Good Lord.
But I wouldn't have a go at anyone who's enjoyed it. I like the fact everyone's chatting about these movies have made boffo box office. People are going to the cinema to go and see them.
Well, I watched a film that you've wanted me to watch for a really long time.
Ooh, no way.
Yeah.
No way.
Yes way. It's a little old film with Mr. Robert Redford. and Mr. Other Old Hollywood Actors.
Sneakers!
No, not Sneakers. I didn't watch Sneakers.
Jesus Christ, mate. The only Robert Redford movie you should be watching is Sneakers. Oh, fuck, I know actually what you're going to say. Yeah, you should have watched this one. Tell me more.
When I sat down on the bench, I put my hand down on top of the wasp and it the sting me. Yeah, I watched The Sting.
Yes.
But unfortunately, I can't talk to you about it because I watched it for Movie Club with my friend Paul, who was really the person that got me to watch it, despite the fact that you've been telling me to for a long, long time. So I just wanted you to know that I've seen the film The Sting, but I can't actually talk to you about it because I haven't talked to Paul about it yet on Movie Club. That's tomorrow.
Yeah, fine. Talk to Paul about it. It's only one of the great movies of all time.
Sure.
And Robert Redford and Paul Newman have the greatest chemistry in it. Like, never mind.
Is Paul Newman in it?
Yeah, Paul Newman.
Oh, is he one of the actors, is he? Paul Newman.
Yeah, it's Butch and Sundance, but it's a sting. And you got Robert Shaw from
Oh, yeah,
from
I didn't
Jaws.
Recognize him.
Yeah, because he's got a little tash. He's got a little funny tash.
He's got a little funny tash. That's Paul Newman, that is.
Yeah.
Anyway, I can't talk about it, but... you know, I did think like one day if you wanted to, you could watch like one of the Harry Potter films and then talk to your friends about it, but refuse to talk to me about it. You know, that could be quite fun.
Do you know what? Instead of us talking about one of the great, you know, buddy conflicts of all time, what we should do instead for like an hour or so is we should talk about the remake of Alfie starring Jude Law.
Yeah, I agree.
That's what we should do because that's what people would much rather hear about. The remake of Alfie, starring Jude Law, directed by Charles Shire.
Who the hell's... I mean, I wish Charles Shire was Shire, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, mate, 2004, 106 mins from the director of Father of the Bride, Father of the Bride Part 2, Baby Boom. I mean, just... I mean, I've got a soft spot for Father of the Bride. Some lovely moments in that. But Shire... There's only one Shire I like, and that's Shia LaBeouf.
There's only one Shire I like, and it's the Shire that the hobbits live inside of.
Yeah. There's only one Shire I like, and that's a horse
of the
same name.
Well, there's only one Shire I don't like, and that's a horse, of course. Because you remember, I used to work on a farm.
Yeah.
Remember that?
What's the rule about that again? About and you can only wear it. You're not allowed to wear a certain kind of shoe around those horses, are you?
You can't wear a certain type of shoe around those horses.
Because,
you can't.
Yeah.
You can.
Because Shire horses, they're so powerful, they can crush metal. I tell you what, sometimes, I think if you're a new listener and you're coming in at Alfie, This is very heady, inside baseball, in joke, you know, chitter chatter.
That's true, isn't it? But do you know, I think that's an acceptable teenage urban myth to read, to believe in.
That's not an urban myth.
Yeah, it's an urban myth. No, it is an urban myth. Loads of people believe that to be true. That's like one of those ones that people tell you. A bit like the most famous one, although I think the celebrity involved in this changes, but one of the famous ones that I've spoken to people about, I think you even know what I'm going to say, don't you? What is it? What am I going to say?
Gerbil up the arse.
No, not that, no.
Oh, fuck, what? That's shot.
No, no. Oh. One of the most famous urban myths about a celebrity. I think you know what I'm going to say. I think you know what I'm going to say, don't you?
A pint full of semen in the stomach.
No, not that. No, one of the most famous urban myths that lots of kids from different schools and different age groups, the celebrity changed, but the story was always the same. I think you know what I'm going to say, don't you? Don't you already know?
Yeah, no, of course. It's just trying to steer away from jizz and hamsters.
It's not soggy biscuit or anything like that.
No.
But it's not that far.
Oh no, it's about the one who froze a turd in the freezer and dildoed herself with it.
I do remember that one, but it's not that one. Not that one. Fucking hell. Why would anyone ever do that, by the way? Why did people believe that as teenagers? It's much better to believe that a Shire horse could crush a steel toe-cap shoe than it is to believe that a woman would freeze a turd to use it as a dildo. That's just absolutely insane. Now, the one I'm thinking of is one, and again, the celebrities within it changed depending on your generation, but the story was always the same. I think you might know Which one? Let me tell you. Marilyn Manson. Let me just say Marilyn Manson.
Oh, yeah. It's taking a rib out to suck your own dick.
Yes, taking a rib out to suck your own dick, which wouldn't have any impact, incidentally, because it's nothing to do with the ribs. They don't get in the way. It's the vertebrae that don't bend in that fashion.
And or the small willy. My small willy!
I've spoken to other people who are different ages than me, and they've all heard the same urban myth. But sometimes it's a different celebrity.
What other celebrities have you heard?
Prince was one of them. And who else? Who was another one? I can't remember a younger
boy. I can imagine Jared Leto, who would definitely be...
Yeah.
Now he would be the guy.
He's actually done it. No, he's actually for sure done it, because that's...
Can I tell you the fucking urban myth that pisses me off more than ever? And this someone shared this on my holiday with me. People tell this story, like, and they always say... Good friend, best friend I know, they told me this happened to them, with a straight face. And they believe it. They believe this friend. And I don't know the friend. And I've heard this story so many times. I've seen it in a fucking sitcom. And the story is always someone is round someone else's house. It's either like they've had sex the night before. It's someone new. The other person who lives at the house has had to leave. And they've left the person who doesn't live there in the house by themselves, and the person has to do a shit, and they do a big old shit in the toilet. Yeah. And for some reason, they either forget to flush it, or they think they flushed it and then they haven't, and then they panic and they have to remove it, and then they put it in a plastic bag, and they put it in the bed, and then they get locked out, and then there's a turd in a bag in this place, and they can't get back into it. And I'm getting told this story. And it's happened. There's no way it's happened to as many people who have told the story. It's, oh, mate, it's nonsense.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Do you want to hear some more urban myths of teenage urban myths?
I do.
Yeah. Now I'm reading from BuzzFeed. Do you remember BuzzFeed?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That was just a little dig at the passing of time there. Now, here's one. The Watchful Paintings. This is the writer Emily Benjamin from Facebook has included this one, because you'll recall that the website BuzzFeed didn't really have any, it had a lot of user-generated content, didn't it? Now, this one's called The Watchful Paintings, remember? This has creeped me out ever since I heard it. One night, there was a man walking alone in the woods. He noticed that it was getting dark outside, and he needed to find a place to sleep. Eventually, he came across a cabin and decided it would suffice. When he went in, he noticed that the walls were covered with paintings of people, and their eyes seemed to be following him. It freaked him out a little, but since it was late, he decided to ignore it and go to sleep. When he woke in the morning, he noticed that the paintings were gone, and that there were only windows.
Mm. No, that was never an urban legend.
You didn't like that one?
The urban legend that we had, this was like 10 or 11, was that a girl had inserted a test tube to pleasure herself and had shattered. And that's like, oh yeah, that definitely happened.
Yeah. No, here's one as well that's not that dissimilar to those sorts of things. This is the toilet seat pregnancy one, you know, where you could accidentally get pregnant off the toilet seat if you use the toilet where someone has just masturbated, you know? Yeah, she got pregnant off the toilet seat.
You see, I would hear, even at 13, I would just think, who's masturbating onto a toilet seat? Why are you leaving it there? That's just not where it goes. We've talked about where jizz goes when you do it. You don't leave your business on the toilet seat. And also, a woman or a girl, they don't sit their fanny on the toilet seat. The bits are over
don't
the hole.
Don't say that word. Don't say that. Just say sex organ. There's no need to say that.
What, fanny?
Oh God!
Americans think that's the bottom, and actually, it's
well. You know how I know that? Because in the film Alfie from 2004, a Sienna Miller, while doing a American accent, says, "I've worked my fanny off today." You know, and I suppose there's a kind of a fun frisson in that, because she's really an English actor doing an American accent and saying that term. You know, Okay. What about this one? The man on the bus. This is a myth from Vice.com. My friend Kelly was on the bus into town once, and this guy sat behind her, knocking on the back of her seat. She thought he was playing with himself, so she span around. But he wasn't wanking. He had a knife, and he was literally a millimetre away from getting through the plastic and into her back.
That's a good one.
Is it?
Yeah, I've never heard that one. I quite like it.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to be the host. And Joe prefers to be the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
Hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast.
Hello.
And welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your host, Adam Richmond.
Adam Richmondo.
Nah, that's done now. Don't do that anymore.
Oh, mate, that's one of your catchphrases. You say your name in a funny way. That's like high art, you know? You've been doing that for months. Adam Richmondo. The way you say it, it's good, you know? I agree. You've got to let things go. I agree. I know. You know I know that. But I'm just saying I enjoyed it. I'm like, in this instance, I'm the listener. I'm the one thinking, I like it when he says Adam Richmondo, and now he stopped. Just say it one more time for me before you let it go.
No, because you're puppeting me.
I'm not puppeting you. I just want to hear it one more. I want to hear it one more time before it's finished. Adam Richmondo.
Well, you know, you're making fun now. I don't want to
I'm
do
not
it.
Making fun. I'm genuinely saying it so I can hear it. Come on, say it to me one more time.
Okay. Hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your host, Adam Richmondo, aka Adam Richmond.
I like it. You should keep doing it.
Okay. Anyway, this is the show where we chat about the movies or films that we forgot we'd even seen in the first place. And doing that, as always, is my co-host, the main host, Mr. Joe Devine.
Hello, mate. All right, how's it going?
Yeah. Pretty good. If you can't tell from our silly little Cockney voices, we've already mentioned what we're doing. On today's episode, we're doing the 2004 remake of the Michael Caine starring flick Alfie.
What's it all about?
It's directed by Charles Shire, starring Jude Law as the titular Alfie. Marissa Tomei pops up, Omar Epps, and you've also got Sienna Miller, Susan Sarandon as well, and it was written by Elaine Pope, who hasn't really written much else, and also Shire. Bill Norton, of course, wrote the original, and I think he also wrote the play it was based on. You know, this is based on a play. I never knew that.
I even watching this remake, I felt, oh, this is probably based on a play. Does Michael Caine do asides in the original Alfie?
The remake with Jude Law is basically entirely Jude Law talking in voiceover or to the camera. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the original, it's a bit more peppered into it. And the scenes are very, it feels like they're very dramatic, play-like scenes, meaty and verbose. It's great. I really loved watching the original.
Right.
Here's to the Letterboxd. Meet a man who never met a woman he didn't love. A tale of a philosophical womanizer who is forced to question his seemingly carefree existence. He's not forced. Just like the original, it's kind of almost episodic. There's no real story. You could argue it's a character study. Mm-hmm. Jude Law is a shagger of women. One of the episodes is he can't get a hard on. One of the episodes is he accidentally shags his best mate's ex-girlfriend who his ex-mate wants to get back with. Mm. Yeah, one of the episodes is he shags an older woman.
Right.
and all the way through, Jude Law keeps turning to the camera going, "Hello, I'm smug and smarmy. I'm the worst version of Jude Law you've ever seen."
Yeah. He goes, "The thing about feelings is they sneak up on you, except they don't in this film because I don't have any feelings."
It's a shit film. It's probably one of the worst films we've done on this podcast.
I think it might be. I was actually going to ask you if you think it is the worst film. Let me just have a quick look at all the films we've ever done to see if I think there's one that's worse than this. Okay, now I'll shout out the ones I think you might think could have a shout for being worse, okay? Early entry, Blades of Glory. All I want to hear from you is better or worse.
I mean, Blades of Glory at least has got a couple of chuckles in it.
Right, so Blades of Glory is better.
It's a better watch, and yeah. It's shorter.
Okay, King Arthur.
Yeah, that's better. You know, yeah. It's kind of so bad. It's bad but fun in a you know, you've got Ray Winston doing his fun little Ray Winston stuff. Had loads more fun watching King Arthur. Oh, so just yes or no?
Just say better or worse. I like it when you say one word, you know. Jumper.
Better.
The Original Italian Job.
Ooh,
that's close, because that's also abysmal.
Abysmal. I'm going to say that's a tie.
Passengers.
Ugh. Better.
Better. Oh, my God.
I know, but at least you get Jennifer Lawrence sweaty.
God.
And also, that had one of our great convos about, like, what you do when you've got a woman in stasis.
Oh, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
That was a great chat.
Good chat. Ghosts of Girlfriends Past.
Better.
Right. All the Mission Impossible films.
Don't be a dickhead.
I'm teasing. What did you want to say about Ghosts of Girlfriends Past?
That's also about a horrible womanizer shagger who learns right. The error of his ways. That's the same plot.
But it's better than this one.
Just a bit, really. The problem with this remake is it's completely defanged the original outfit.
Shanghai Noon. Come on, that's maybe not as good.
That's better than...
Oh my God, wait, I'm nearly finished.
For too long I've been parched of thirst and unable to quench it. Too long I've been starving to death and haven't died. I feel nothing. Not the wind on my face, nor the spray of the sea. You best start believing in ghost stories, Miss Turner. You're in one.
There are some nice... I think Sienna Miller in this is pretty good. I don't know why they gave her an American accent. It would have been lovely if they'd kept her as a... There's no. Yeah, she could have had her own accent, but she does quite a good American accent. She's pretty fantastic, I'd say, as the gorgeous young woman that slowly becomes insufferable and annoying to Jude. That... plot doesn't feature at all in the original Alfie.
Can I guess what is in the original Alfie from this new film?
Yeah. They've reshuffled a lot of elements, but a lot of elements are in there.
Does he impregnate his friend's girlfriend?
Yes.
Yeah, and does she have the baby? Is that bit that happens at the end of the new film where he goes and visits them and she's had the baby, is that part of the film?
No, part of the film is, and it's horribly bleak in the original Alfie. He meets this guy, this miserable kind of old guy. Anyway, Alfie ends up banging this guy's wife, and you sort of forget about it. You think, oh, Alfie, that's not very nice. Why have you done that? She gets pregnant, and he says, I'll sort it out for you. And they have a at-home abortion.
Oh, good God.
It's absolutely horrendous. Denham Elliott plays, and he's in the credits as the abortionist.
Right.
And it's quite tough going. And then at the end, Michael Caine's Alfie, he walks, there's a curtain drawn into this grubby kitchen, and the camera just holds on Michael Caine, and he's looking at what would be his... This dead
fetus.
A sort of amazing bit of acting. And then there's this hard cut, and this is where you really know it's a play. There's this hard cut, and he's talking to his mate, and he's going, do you know what? I would have thought, I would have felt a bit more about that when I was looking at it. And he's like, he's doing this kind of theatrical monologue right. about looking at this dead fetus. It's a fantastic monologue about it. The wonderful thing about the original Alfie is the delusion of the character and how he, the sort of the lies he tells himself.
Which is almost entirely lost in the 2004 version. You can see from the way the film tries to close itself off at the end that they've tried to make it about something along those lines. But it fails in almost every aspect, doesn't it?
Because I'd forgotten everything about the original Alfie. And the first third of Alfie, it feels like, the first actor anyway, is he's... It's got the same opening, him having sex in a car. It's a lot more comedic and a bit sweeter, but also quite... He keeps... Whenever he talks to camera, Kane's Alfie, he refers to women as it.
Oh.
It's going to go away happy now. It's quite horrible, but also it doesn't pull its punches. But he's got this doting sort of girlfriend. And that character in the remake is played by Marissa Tomei, one of the most beautiful women of all time. But in this one, that you stay with that a lot longer, and they end up having a kid.
Right.
And you sort of think, oh, Alfie's gonna bail on the kid. And he doesn't. The sort of first act of the original Alfie is he hangs around. He's very horrible to this sort of mouse-like girlfriend. He refuses to marry her, but he kind of stays. You can see how much he loves the boy, and you see the baby grow up to be a sort of little boy who he really dotes on. And then, but he treats the mother really, really badly. And eventually she can't handle it anymore, and she sort of has to leave. And then he's sort of like, oh, okay, forget about it then. and so he's like, yeah. And then you can see how heartbroken he is that he doesn't get to see his kid anymore. But he very swiftly moves on. He's like, oh, whatever, you can't trust birds. Never mind. And it goes on to the sort of the next segment.
Yeah.
It's just really sad, and there's nothing like that in this.
It's a shame.
It's the opening section of this movie is you get a little taste of Alfie the Shagger, Jude Law the Shagger, and then the key bit is him struggling to get an erection.
This is essentially what I suspected, that the 2004 Jude Law version of Alfie is the result of someone who watched the original film and misunderstood the whole thing and thought it was like a sexy players movie with a little light touch and remade something which is essentially like a mistaken abomination version of like a Frankenstein's version of the original. Because I've never, whenever I've watched 2004's Alfie, I've never been able to understand what the original with Michael Caine must have been, because this film bears no resemblance to something I could feasibly see Michael Caine doing in the 60s or the 70s or whenever they made the original Alfie. Would you like to hear some things I thought about 2004's Alfie?
I would, because we barely talked about it. Let's chat about 2004's Jude Law's Alfie.
Okay. I think there is... I mean, there are many, but there are one or two core, completely fundamental issues with the film that stop it being a real film. The main one is that I don't think it's Jude Law. I think it's the character and the writing, and but also everything about the film. Alfie lacks the requisite depth to make the film work. It doesn't work at all, right? Like the trade-off in order to get away with the silly, saucy, sexy, fun Alfie, and for the first hour is just kind of having sex with everyone and enjoying himself. The trade-off is required in order for that to be okay, and it's not there at all. Like either Jude Law can't portray the depth that is required for for this to be communicated, or it's just not there enough in the script for it to feel like it's okay for the character to do. He's not likable in any way. There's nothing redeeming about him. He's just an asshole.
I can tell you what the problem is. It's because they've bottled it. Like the character of Alfie, like they want him to be the hero. They want right. like he loves women. I love women. And I want to like please them. I'm going to have a lot of fun and I'm going to enjoy myself. And it to make that character interesting and give him depth would be something more like, okay, I think he hate, like, let's have him hate women. Let's have him, like, I don't know, his dad left him when he was a kid and he was raised by his mum and he really resented her because she smothered him. That's just like, I mean, that's very bog standard. I wouldn't write that movie, but something like that. And let's have him actually hate women and resent them. And so he needs to dominate them and go out and
punish them
and he needs to control them.
Right.
This film doesn't want to do that. It's a 2004 romantic comedy. I have no idea who it's fucking for. It's not for women and it's not for men. I think they think it is for men. It's like this GQ version of like masculinity, of like
right.
this is how you can be a man, and it's kind of, he's a cheeky chappy and you can get away with this sort of stuff. It's a little bit empty, but also it's
well,
very
for 2004,
fun.
It's a little modern as well, because he's quite feminine in some ways. You know, he does the nail painting. He tells Susan Sarandon, you know, how she should wear her necklace differently. He wears cologne. He dresses well. It's sort of okay with him being kind of gay friendly, right? And that at the time, 2004, that probably felt like quite a modern thing. Oh, let's update Alfie so that he's like, you know, everyone's favorite 21st century man. Whereas watching it now, it's like incredibly antiquated.
Yeah, fundamentally it's like, oh, how can men connect with women and love them? That's what it should be about. And it's not about that at all.
It's not about anything. It's incredibly shallow. And here's one of my least favorite bits. There's the bit where he's realizing he doesn't want to be with Sienna Miller. He's sitting on the couch and she's been painting and she's nude and she's trying to get him to stay. He doesn't want to stay. And then he tells this boring story about when he was a schoolboy on a school trip at a museum and he saw a picture of a statue of some old Greek god. I can't remember what she was called. Aphrodite? Was it Aphrodite? I can't remember. And he says, I loved her. And then Jude Law starts to do real acting. Like, I just was blown away by her, you know. But then the teacher said it's time to go and I walked around the side and I looked again and I saw all these cracks, these imperfections. And I was watching that and I thought, this is the low point of the film. This is not a metaphor. this is
it's an appalling monologue. When you when you watch the original Alfie, there's some just fantastic monologues that Kane delivers. It's an absolute shambles.
I also think the film never resolves its own issues. Right? I think that's one thing. If you're going to have a character in a scene like that make comments like that, it's okay if later in the film they acknowledge that the imperfections, the cracks in the side of Aphrodite, are the very things that you love about the person you end up with, right? There's that lovely scene, isn't there, in Good Will Hunting, where Robin Williams says, he retells the story of how his wife used to fart in the night and wake herself up. And it's a very sweet scene, and Matt Damon makes some kind of, you know, youthful comment, oh, how did you deal with that? And he says, no, that's the thing I miss the most, right? It's those little imperfections. It's the things that only you know about them, that nobody else knows, that they're just for you. That's such a sweet scene, and that's a perfect description of what it's like to be in, you know, a long-term relationship with somebody. Alfie, it's okay at that moment in the film that Alfie doesn't understand that about Sienna Miller's character. Alfie never learns that in the film. There's never any acknowledgement that it's these very things that actually are often the glue that you know attracts people to each other or keeps people together. And it's just another reason why the film feels incredibly shallow.
But then again, that's the problem with the whole notion of how they've remade it. they think that they're honouring the source material because the original Alfie doesn't learn.
He would never learn it either, sure.
But it's a different thing in Alfie. Like Alfie in the original, Kane, he's a kind of, you feel sorry for him. And in this, but you can imagine Jude Law going, well, you know, Alfie doesn't learn. You know, Alfie's always Alfie. And sure. So in our version, Alfie must always be Alfie. He can't possibly become, he can't learn that actually, it's not that Aphrodite was cracked. It's that I was cracked. Sure. Oh, no, he wouldn't do that. That would be a betrayal of the character.
Well, it would be okay if there was a character, but there isn't a character. That's the problem, no. Right? You can't have a character exploration movie without a character. I don't know if this is what 2004's Alfie thinks that it is. But it definitely isn't.
But also, they've transported him to New York. And, like, I love the word milieu. I never get to use it enough. But the milieu...
You say milieu all the time, by the way. You're always saying that word.
The milieu of the original Alfie is 1960s London. And baked into that is kind of class and this swinging 60s. It's all kind of... It's in there. And... I love the class system in England. It's fantastic. You know, it's so rich.
Wonderful, fantastic, rich, delightful.
So, I don't know, let's just do a remake and let's just remove all of that. Let's just plop Alfie into New York.
Right.
There's no, you know, they have a different...
Where the streets don't know your name.
And then it's just like, it's not really about anything interesting. It's just a guy in New York shagging around.
Hey, G, are you joining us at the Big Apple later? On Broadway.
I tell you what I wanted. I watched these two horror movies of which I spoke.
Yeah.
And one of which, the obsession flick, is kind of like about a cuck. And it's quite a feature, I think, of a lot of movies now. You have a cuck.
To have a cuck.
You have a cuck, and it's either a satire of the cuck, or it's like a celebration of the cuck, or a satire of the women and how they treat the cuck. Nice guys who are actually toxic. You know, that's the kind of the thing that's pootling around culture.
Yeah.
And so looking at Alfie, to be nice about it, it is almost like this little moment in Amber, this little mosquito Jude Law. This is what was going on with men in 2004.
Sure.
This is what it was about the game.
They were wearing scarves over their blazers and they were trying to sort of camp up a little bit.
Yeah, and trying to be cheeky chappies. And that's how you were going to try and get into women's knickers.
Yeah.
Apologies for using the word knickers. And
sure.
It was a generation of men who still wanted to be James Bond, but also thought they also had to like buck their ideas up and be a bit emotional as well.
Bonjour. Nice sweater.
So one of the things about Alfie is that it's supposed to be I think it's supposed to be a little bit sexy, isn't it? It's supposed to be a bit saucy and sexy. But, you know, ironically, it is very unerotic. I don't think it's very sexy at all. In fact, it's one of the least sexy films. I was watching it with my wife. She said something that really made me laugh. She said, it's really not very sexy. She said, I think the problem with it is that I really don't find Jude Law sexy to the extent where I don't even want to have sex with him. That's what she said. I thought, I think that's the definition of not finding someone sexy, is not wanting to have sex with them.
She doesn't want to have sex with Alfie. You'd want to have sex with Jude Law playing.
She doesn't like Jude Law. She says she doesn't want to have sex with Jude Law. That's just my wife. I'm sure your wife would love to have sex with Jude Law.
No, but the movie, you're saying she's, you know, okay, well, you're broadening out the point. She was saying, you're both saying the film's not sexy, and then she's going, oh, I don't want to have sex with him.
Yeah, she's all over the place. I agree with you. Her point didn't make any sense as literary criticism goes. But it was more just to make the point that the film's not very sexy. What I did instead was I looked up online, what are the sexiest films of all time? And then I realized that I was logged into my work account as I Googled that. So, you know, the IT guys at work are going to be thinking, hey, this guy is looking for some sexy movies to watch, you know?
Which Sienna Miller is very sexy in this movie.
I think Sienna Miller is very sad in this movie. I think that those scenes, that character, are supposed to be the least sexy because, you know, she's quite sad.
Well, that's what I find sexy.
Well... That's cool. I don't. That's okay. That's okay. Do you think the film is a sexy film?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, then there's no need to argue the point. I was. That was just using that as a setup for something else. But we could talk about it more if you want.
No. I just like to say, yeah, she's sexy. What's wrong with being sexy?
Nothing's wrong with being sexy.
No. Sorry, that's a Spinal Tap reference.
Okay. So what I did was I looked online. I googled what are the sexiest films of all time. And I found that there is a Rotten Tomatoes editorial guide to sexy movies. If there's a ranking of the top 125 sexiest movies of all time.
More like a wanking.
A wanking. There's a wanking of the top 125. Here's a little bit of the copy here. What makes a movie truly sexy? Enough to grant... Well, actually, it says enough to grant it entrance to our guide of the sexiest movies ever. Variety is the spice. For some movies, it's about the animal chemistry between its stars. And here it uses two examples. Body Heat, a Mr. and Mrs. Smith it uses.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith is not sexy.
Oh, well, apparently there's great chemistry between the stars.
Thomas Crown Affair, now.
Oh, well, hello.
Saws.
Or the building passion of its characters, like Brokeback Mountain or Titanic. Again, I don't think Brokeback Mountain is sexy, and I don't think it's supposed to be sexy. It's supposed to be romantic, and it is romantic, but it's not sexy, I wouldn't say.
It's quite sexy when they kiss and they first kiss and like go into the tent. That is quite like it's arousing. It's saucy.
Okay, no, fine. That's one sexy scene, but I would say, generally speaking, I'm just surprised it's here in the sexiest films of all time.
No, but that's what I think they're just talking about moments.
They're just talking about moments.
You know, there's no whole movie that's sexy,
right,
for the entirety of the run.
Well, is there not? Now, the question I want to ask you is, can you guess any, and the answer's no, can you guess any of the top 10 films they have here in their top 125 sexiest movies of all time? And there are a few that are pretty recent.
Basic Instinct.
Basic Instinct is not here.
Bound.
Bound is not here.
Blue is the Warmest Colour.
Blue is the Warmest Colour is not here.
What else is really sexy?
I don't think you're going to get any of these. Body Heat is here. That's one I've mentioned already. Body Heat.
Yeah. Oh, Sea of Love.
Sea of Love is not here. No.
This list's all wrong.
Well, it might be in the top 125, but it's not in the top 10.
Well, yeah, that's what the game is. That's
the game, yeah.
Will they say shit like La La Land? Is that what they're saying sexy is these days?
La La Land isn't in there.
Crazy Stupid Love, are they saying that's sexy?
No, that's not.
Oh, Love and Other Drugs?
Love and Other Drugs is not in here, no. Shall I tell you?
Tell me some.
Okay, so number 10 is Call Me By Your Name.
Never seen it.
Have you never seen that film?
No.
Wow, okay. Well, he has sex with a peach in that film at one point. 2023's Hitman with Glenn Powell, the Richard Linklater film, is in here.
That's sexy.
A little bit sexy, yeah. It's an outstanding showcase for leading man Glenn Powell and one of the most purely entertaining films of Richard Linklater's career.
Wrong.
Body Heat's in here at number 8 with a shyster lawyer Ned Racine begins a passionate affair with Mattie Walker, wife of a wealthy Florida businessman.
Kathleen Turner, William Hurt.
In at number 7, Sex, Lies and Videotape. With Andy McDowell and Peter Gallagher. James Spader.
Spader.
James Spader.
Really sexy. James Spader.
Then we've got... this is the first... I've seen this one. Oh, I've seen Hitman as well. And Call Me By Your Name. But I've seen this one in the cinema. 2016's The Handmaiden. Do you you remember that?
Oh.
With yes. help from an orphaned pickpocket, a Korean con man devises an elaborate plot to seduce and bilk a Japanese woman. There you go.
A woman.
A woman.
Old boy should be in here as well. That's very sexy.
Oh, well, Pedro Almodovar's Parallel Mothers is in here. I think with Penne Cruz, of course.
Ooh, yeah, maybe Vanilla Sky will be in here.
Sadly, it's not. You said blue is the warmest colour. I say Portrait of a Lady on Fire, 2019's P of an L on F. That's in here. Yeah. Moonlight.
Right. Still haven't seen it.
I don't remember Moonlight being sexy. I remember it being sad, but maybe it is. I can't recall. You've got to watch Moonlight, man. You've got to watch that.
Waiting for it to crop up in a streamer.
It never will because it's too good. Then Pillion. 2025's Pillion. That's the one with the Dursley cousin. Cousin Dursley.
Yeah, Skarsgård.
And number one, 2013's Gloria.
Ooh.
An aging divorcee embarks on an intense affair with a man that she picked up at a disco. Gloria. Yeah.
That's a really good flick.
Yeah?
They remade it with Julianne Moore. And they called it Gloria Bell.
Couple of others in here that I like. In at number 16, Passages. Don't think you ever saw Passages, did you? 2023's Passages with Franz Rogowski. There's some homo and hetero sex in that with the same person. Lot of sex. Sex for everyone in that film.
Where's Showgirls? Where's Basic Instinct? Where's Bound?
Also, in at number 26, Boogie Nights, which I think is one of the least sexy films ever, intentionally. A lot of scenes, it's a film about sex, but it's not a sexy film by design. So I'm surprised that that is included here. And I don't know who's watching that and thinking it's sexy.
It's the people who don't know how to put the list together. They're talking out their ass.
Right.
They haven't seen the movies. They've just read a fucking blurb about them. And then they've made this bullshit list.
Bound was number 39.
That should be number one.
Well, I've never seen Bound.
It's one of the sexiest films ever made.
Right. Atonement's in here. I guess it's got a bit of friss on, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's a nice bit.
Up against the bookcase.
I can smell your cunt.
Shame is in here, which again is a surprise because I think it's literally the antithesis of a sexy film. It's not a sexy film. It's a film about sex that is incredibly unsexy, again, by design.
I know. You're reading the list now. I didn't make it.
Nymphomaniac, Volume 1. Again.
Same
not
thing.
A sexy film. Not a very sad, moving, compelling film, but not a sexy film. Baby Girl of 2024. No. No. Eyes Wide Shut, sure. Yeah, sure. You can throw that in there. That's fine.
No, you can't.
You watched The Housemaid, didn't you? Sydney Sweeney's Housemaid.
Just again, waiting for it to pop up on the streamer and find the key moments, and then okay. I'll see bits of The Housemaid.
And of course Saltburn, because surely that's, you know, love that bit where he has sex with the grave.
Love that bit where he sucks spunk out of a bath.
Yeah. Love that bit where he takes out Rosamund Pike's tubes.
I love that bit where he explains everything that he did in the movie.
Yeah.
Because I forgot and I didn't understand what was going on, so it was nice to be caught up.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I love that bit where he dances around at the end of the film in the house, and the only reason it's good is because Sophie Ellis-Bextor wrote a really good song, and that when people were watching the film, they thought this is a really good film, and then when they watched it again later, they realised it wasn't a good film. I like that bit.
Yeah, I like that bit.
Do you want to play the box office game?
Yeah, I'd love to play the box office game.
All right, let's play the box office game. For the film Alfie, you'll recall, of course, November 7, 2004.
2004.
Budget brackets estimated, per favore. Bit of a tricky one, isn't it?
Well, they've shot on location.
In Manhattan.
This film feels, it wishes that New York was a character.
Right.
But it's like his character, like it's Sex in the City. It's weak.
It's terrible. I mean, it might terrible. As well not be filmed in New York. It doesn't look like Manhattan at all.
No.
Got that scene where the girlfriend is dancing and singing this music and they're playing pool and it's all very affected. Oh, God, it's horrible.
So, but they would have spent money on it. Jude Law's getting a pretty penny.
He's getting a packet.
Back then, they would overspend.
But what does overspending mean for a film like this?
Well, a film like this is just a character study about a guy who shags women. Yeah. You should be able to make this like an indie. You could make it for like $15, $20 million.
I mean, you could make this for much less, I'm sure you could. But yeah, no, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
And it looked good and it not feel like a low-budget thing. But yeah, they're going to overspend and maybe they're going to spend $40 million on it.
Right. Well, guess again, chump. Because they are going to overspend with capital letters, OVERSPEND.
60?
It's $60 million estimated.
I thought I had 60 chiming in my head. I thought, no way, that's obscene.
Yeah, I mean, where is it? I don't know where it is. I don't know where it is in the film. I guess it's on the cast, potentially on the cast.
It is expensive to shoot on location. You know, it does, even though it sells New York short.
It very much does.
But, you know, big old crew, Sarandon's getting paid, Jude's getting paid.
Right, yeah. No, fair enough. It's a miracle. Yeah, baffling, absolutely. Okay, opening weekend US and Canada, November 7, 2004. What do you think?
Why spend $60 million on a movie like this that it's got zero appeal to women and men? They're not going to make that back in a million years.
Agree, hard agree.
They're hoping that Jude Law smirking on a poster is enough to trick people to come in.
To trick women to come.
And so I feel like it might even be making the hundreds of thousands. I know. What's he coming off of? Is he coming off the back of Cold Mountain, is he? And coming off the back of Talented Mr. Ripley? The Americans are familiar with him. It's a New York flick.
So the year before, he was in Cold Mountain. The year before that, he was in Road to Perdition. The year before that, he was in AI, Artificial Intelligence, and Enemy at the Gates. The year before that, he was in Love, Honor, and Obey. Talented Mr. Ripley the year before that. Existence the same year. Gattaca a couple of years before that. So, you know, he's had a pretty good run. But are any of those films huge?
Not really. I mean, Cold Mountain was a kind of prestige, made a splash at the Oscars type flick.
But this is the first time they've tried to really see if he could be a leading man, like see if he can open a flick, right?
Yeah, and he can't. And I think maybe it makes, if it's lucky, maybe it makes a mil.
It makes $6.2 million.
Ooh, okay.
6.2 opening weekend.
That's pretty good.
Oh, popping, peep, bang. Right, gross or wide?
Well, the reviews aren't good.
No.
It's going to massively underperform.
The reviews aren't good and it's bad. I think those are two. If we're thinking about the 10x multiplier, those are two hard multipliers.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. But, so maybe it makes 25 mil?
35 mil. 35 mil. Yeah. Just over half of expected.
They could have cleaned their face if they'd spent the actual what it could have made it for. But like everyone's just taking home a pay packet.
Yeah.
Everyone's just rinsing the studio.
Right.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I hope everyone is ashamed of it. I've never heard Jude Law talk about it later in his career, but. And to credit Jude Law, I don't think he's good in the film, but he's incredibly watchable. He is acting like he's in a perfume advert, probably because he's directed to do that. The main thing I thought while I was watching it is like, wow, this guy is very confident in his own sexiness. Because every single scene he's in, he's pouting and he's sort of like doing the kind of eye fluttering, and it's all very embarrassing. It's like he acts in throughout the entire film in a way that if I was doing for 2 seconds, I'd cringe myself out of existence. But he does it, and he's very attractive. He's very compelling. He has charisma, but the character is completely vacuous and two-dimensional, and there's nothing here at all to support him. So to Jude Law's credit, he attempts to carry a film that is just hollow in every other possible way, with the potential exception of a couple of performances here and there. I like Susan Sarandon. You like Sienna Miller. You know, there are a few bits here and there. I will say one final thing, which is the nail in the coffin for me for this film is there's a scene at the very end where I'm trying to remember her name. Her name is Dory. The character name is Dory. She's also in 30
Jane
Rock.
Jane Krakowski.
Is it Jane Krakowski? Yeah. He bumps into her on a pier, and 2004's version of, you know, of his recompense and her feminism is that she resists his charms again. He wants to apologize to her. He's making it all about him. Even though what's actually happened is that he's wronged her. He's allowed her to get quite close to him by giving her the wrong, giving her the wrong idea. And then he just abandons her. Sees her at the end. He's learnt all these lessons in theory as a result of what's happened in the film. And he wants to apologise to her. But his apology is nothing to do with her, everything to do with him. In the same way that a few scenes earlier, when he sees his friend again, his friend who he's betrayed, and his friend has found out that he's been betrayed. He says, Jude Law says, I didn't mean to. And his friend says, you never mean to hurt people, Alfie. You never mean to hurt people, but you do. It's abysmal writing, because in that moment, the friend would never say anything of the sort. It's allowing the entire moment to be about Alfie, the protagonist of this film. It's incredibly selfish, selfish writing. And it happens again at the end, where Dory, he says sorry, and Dory gives a subtle, gentle little nod, as if to forgive him, as if to say it's okay. I found that moment just intensely unlikable, because why the hell should she have to do that? The film has a woman forgive him at the end of the film. For no fucking reason. No reason at all. She's not a character. She's not a three-dimensional character. She has nothing. She's a plot device to help the audience realize that he's learned something and moved on. And I think it's a smack in the face of all of the things that the film misunderstands about relations and people and sexes. I hated it.
But also, she's cheated on her husband. Like, she's sitting on in her ivory tower. Like, he somehow wronged her because he didn't call her back. You're fucking cheating on your husband at the beginning, and you're acting all bruised. Fuck off. It's nonsense.
When was the last time you heard from your father?
Daddy.
Do you think they try to get Michael Caine to play the old man that he meets in the doctor's office?
There must have been a conversation. Or like even if he would have been the there's an old geezer who is shepherding Susan Sarandon's character out, like get him to do that. But yeah, of course Caine would say no. I can see why Jude Law would have done this, like on paper. But you know, let's do a modern Alfie. You can be the modern Alfie and we'll honour the character and we'll make something really smart and modern. And you're going to be a star. We'll set it in New York. But they've just got... They've got the fucking writer-director of Father of the Bride to do it. That's just not the right person to make this movie.
No. Absolutely.
So it sucks. And I like Jude Law. Should we do the bit of the show where one of us reads out a list of movies they forgot with a view to catching out the other one?
Yes, 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 yes.
You got me on Alfie.
Yes.
So this is all your fault.
Right.
Yeah, so it's my go.
Yep.
And I'm gonna get you. If I can't get you in five, we're going to do your reserve film. What's your reserve film?
My reserve film is the film Sneakers. I would have thought you'd be happy to watch Sneakers.
I'd love to watch Sneakers.
All right, so just accept it.
Okay, fine.
Fine.
Oh, God. Okay, here we go.
Yep.
Cape Fear.
Never seen it.
Martin Scorsese's Cape Fear. Joe's never seen it.
Never seen it, mate.
This one is from... it's popped up before, but it's popped up again on the Discord. Alidsil mentioned this. I think this could be a fun one. The Mask of Zorro.
What? Are you joking?
You tried to get me on it.
I've tried to get you on it. And now you're telling me that you're saying it because someone in the Discord said it. That's mine that I'm trying to get you on.
But you haven't got me on it. You haven't said it for ages.
No, I'm not saying it's fine. I haven't said it for ages. But you can't attribute that to someone in the Discord. I've literally said that twice on this show in the past. And now you're attributing it to someone on the Discord. Some listener who clearly hasn't shown.
I just said we've mentioned it.
I'm just furious about that. I'm absolutely furious.
I said we've mentioned it before. And then it's just popped into my head because someone mentioned it. I want people to come to the Discord.
So you said no to it, but you want me to say yes to it. It's got me because I thought when I said it to you, I was like, this is a forget you forgot. I want to hear three more because that feels like a cheat, but I will
accept
it. It's
not a cheat, just it's a good one.
I want to hear three more. That's absolutely outrageous. Matt, can I just ask you, for honesty, for 1 second, just close your eyes and put yourself in this, imagine this scenario, okay? You had twice tried to get me on a film. Say any film.
RoboCop.
Yeah, RoboCop. Let's say twice you tried to get me on RoboCop, okay? And both times I said, no. I said no, right? But you were like, oh, maybe keep it on your list. Maybe I'll change my mind in the future. And then a few months later, I said RoboCop. And I said, oh, yeah, we've mentioned it on here before, but I attributed it to someone in the Discord. Would you'd be like, hang on, that's mine, I said that. That's what you do. Don't you know you do that?
No, I don't think I would actually. I think I'd be a lot classier about it. I'd want people to, you know, join the Discord and join the fun chats we have.
Unbelievable.
Okay. Amadeus.
I rewatched that very recently. I think it's a fabulous film. I would never forget it, unfortunately.
We were supposed to save that for the episodes. You said we promised we'd do it, yeah.
Well, it's too bad because I couldn't wait any longer and I watched it. I spurned my watch on it. I went to Vienna. I had to watch it. You
yeah,
know?
No, that's
I couldn't not
fair.
Watch it.
The Burbs?
Never seen it.
Can he pull out a humdinger? Can he pull out a humdinger? From the same year, Rounders.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do Mask of Zorro.
Great.
With Antonio Banderas.
Banderas and Anthony Hopkins and
And Catherine Zeta-Jones, right? Is Anthony Hopkins in it? Is he evil?
No.
Is he good?
He's the guy who trains him up. He's the original Zorro.
Wow.
Director Martin Campbell.
Do you know, it's genuinely been, I would say, 20 years minimum since I watched that film.
I saw it once on release.
Which was when?
Like 1998.
Wow. We're verging on 30 years then since you've seen that.
Yeah.
Wow.
138 mins. I don't like that runtime. I don't like that runtime.
Well, don't worry. We've got to do it. We'll do it. It's going to be fine. All right.
All right, mate. See you later. Right, see you then, about. See you later.
Yeah. Oh, mate. I've got to tell you something before I go, mate. Yeah.